The Vigilant finally reached Point Nemo, and Camberson was ecstatic. Matt and Donnie interviewed him in the science lab as he prepared to enter the deep sea discovery and begin his search for Relay. Donnie asked, "What do you think we'll find down there, Mr. Camberson?"
"I don't know, my boy, and that's what makes this an adventure. I imagine there'll be some ruins, no doubt, or maybe some remnant of ancient pathways.
Oh my goodness,
what if we discover some artwork from this lost civilization? It'd be truly breathtaking, would it not, Dr. Petra?"
Camberson turned to look over his shoulder at Dr. Petra, as she milled about in the background, going through checklists and adjusting various electronic devices.
"Yes, it would, Mr. Camberson," she replied disinterestedly, absorbed in her activities.
"And what if you find nothing? What then?"
asked Donnie. Camberson's eyes narrowed, with visible frustration.
"My boy, I find that question to be borderline insulting. My years of research and dedication have shown me that there is undoubtedly something that remains of the lost city of Relay, not 6,000 meters below where we sit this very moment. The question is not whether or not we find something, but what we find when we do."
"What will you do when you find evidence of the lost city?"
"Well, I suppose the first thing will be to capture as much information as I can about it using the submersible's video equipment. Once we've recorded visual evidence and returned to civilization, the next step will be to put together our documentary. Once that's finished, we'll use it to get the funding and support we need to organize another, much larger, expedition to return and excavate the lost city. We'll learn as much as we can about it and bring much of it to the surface, in the same manner they did with the Titanic. It would be a grand endeavor indeed."
Dr. Petra shouted from her command center,
"Mr. Camberson, we're all set!"
He waved at her, and then looked into the camera and said,
"If you'll excuse me, I need to go make history."
Camberson climbed into the hatch of the deep sea discovery. Once he was inside, Dr. Petra pushed a button and opened the ship's bay door and lowered the submersible into the ocean. It glided effortlessly into the water and bobbed about a few moments. Then, with a metallic whooshing noise, it shot under the surface. Matt, Donnie, and Dr. Petra gathered around the command center to monitor its progress. Meanwhile, Captain Bill remained at the rudder to ensure the ship wouldn't drift away in the current. Emerson's voice crackled through the speakers as he said,
"We've got a positive initiation sequence. All clear."
The video monitor showed the scene around the submersible as the sunlight from the surface gradually faded away to the abyssal darkness below. Soon the monitors showed nothing but complete blackness. Several minutes passed before Camberson's voice came through the speaker once more and said,
"I've reached the ocean floor. Pressure readings are holding, and all systems are normal. I'm going to turn on the lighting system."
At that moment, the lights turned on around the submersible, illuminating the ocean floor and the video monitors. Matt thought to himself that what Dr. Petra had said was true. It closely resembled the surface of the moon. The floating detritus and an abundance of stars in the background were the only clues as to the submersible's true location. Then it began to glide across the ocean floor. Nobody said anything for a long time except for Camberson as he periodically noted technical status updates. Dr. Petra applied in confirmation to the microphone. After several minutes, the lights from the submersible reflected off something metallic, and Camberson piloted his craft in that direction. A few moments later, they saw the red and yellow insignia of the Russian Mir space station, inscribed in a chunk of metal.
"Looks like you were right, Dr. Petra. This really is a cemetery for spacecrafts," Matt said.
After several hours of searching, the deep-sea discovery milled about the ocean floor. Mill found himself quite bored. It had come across no other spacecraft debris or anything else even remotely interesting. Even Dr. Petra, who'd been intrigued by the mission's progress until now, was starting to seem disinterested. Matt looked over at Donnie, who'd fallen asleep in his chair. A moment later, Dr. Petra snatched the microphone and said,
"Hold on, Mr. Camberson. Can you please turn 30 degrees starboard and then advance about 20 meters?
"Absolutely,"
came the reply through the speakers. Matt and Dr. Petra watched the monitor intently as a shape began to appear on the ocean floor in the light from the submersible. To Matt, it looked like a bush that consisted of a series of long white stalks with red tulips at the end. Dr. Petra said excitedly into the microphone.
Do you see that? Mr. Camberson, those are tube worms.
Indeed. Indeed they are, Dr. Petra. Quite healthy ones at that, replied Camberson.
There must be some kind of previously undiscovered geothermal vent nearby. This is fascinating,
Dr. Petra said as she began furiously taking notes on a notepad lying on a desk at the command center.
Let's look about this area, see what else we can find.
Okay, I will. But remember, we're here to find a lost city, not study marine life, replied Camberson. However, this whole area seems to be in my search field, so there's no harm in poking around a bit.
After the submersible scanned the area for a few more minutes, Dr. Petra spotted something else. She said into the microphone,
There! Behind the rocky outcrop, I thought I saw something move.
Headed there now, said Camberson.
Dr. Petra and Matt watched as the submersible moved towards a large group of nearby boulders. It glided up and over them, then maneuvered back down to the ocean floor. They gasped at what they saw. This part of the ocean was teeming with sea life, bizarre creatures, ones that Matt had never seen before. He elbowed Donnie awake, yawned and stretched and said,
What?
Donnie, you gotta see this, it's amazing. The three of them watched through the monitor as the sea creatures came into view. Dr. Petra's jaw was agape as she scribbled notes with fiery passion, shouting out the names of the animals as they appeared.
That's a frilled shark. There's a viper fish and there's a wolf fish. That nightmarish-looking thing is a giant spider crab, and that's a vampire squid. There's dozens of them all around. I can't believe all these creatures are here.
After a few moments, the look of surprise on her face turned into one of profound confusion. She stared at her notes, and she said,
This isn't possible. There's no way there could be this level of biological diversity in this part of the ocean so far from any other nutrient source. The tube worms I can understand, but with the other species, it's as if something were bringing nutrients here from somewhere else.
All the while, Camberson remained silent as his submersible was surrounded by strange creatures of the deep. Then they saw something else from which they weren't prepared. Off in the distance, a head that was vaguely humanoid, poking out from behind a rock. Its skin was a grayish-green, its face had fish and frog-like features, with palpitating gills on its neck and huge, unblinking eyes. A scaly ridge ran from the top of its head, down its back. The light from the submersible flashed off its shiny skin and it ducked back behind the corner of darkness.
What was that?
Donnie asked in terrified awe.
I don't know,
Dr. Petra stammered as she stared at the screen. Then, as if snapping out of a trance, she grabbed the microphone and said,
Mr. Camberson, did you see that?
Silence. Dr. Petra tried again.
Mr. Camberson, can you hear me? Did you see what that was behind the rock? Please respond.
Camberson's voice started to come through the speakers. At first, he sounded like he was quietly mumbling to himself, but then his voice rose slightly. Then it became apparent that he was gibbering nonsense. The submersible picked up speed in the direction of where the humanoid creature had been. As it crested a hill, Dr. Petra, Donnie, and Matt all gasped loudly in unison. At the bottom of the trench, there stood a building with architecture that was rough and cyclopean. It consisted of stone bricks of different sizes and shapes, stacked atop one another haphazardly without being bound together by mortar. However, there was no doubt that the structure had been intentionally designed and built by some intelligence. There was something extremely bizarre about the way that it was constructed. Its lines and planes didn't intersect how they should, but instead curved towards and away from each other in ways that were hard to comprehend. Matt vaguely remembered a term that he'd heard once before. Non-Euclidean geometry. He supposed this must have been what that meant.
I did it! I found Relay!
Camberson shouted gleefully, startling everyone. Matt couldn't believe it.
He thought this whole endeavor was going to be for naught, and yet here they were, looking at visual proof of this lost, forgotten city at the bottom of the ocean, literally in the middle of nowhere. He suddenly felt grateful that Donnie had drug him into this. It seemed like this might be the big break that they were looking for after all.
Camberson began gibbering again, but this time much more loudly. The submersible picked up more speed and headed in the direction of the building, and soon, more buildings came into view, some of them grouped together and some significantly larger than the others. There were low, flat surfaces adjacent to twisting towers and bridges. There were structures the size of small houses and others the size of huge office buildings. The submersible was now surrounded by structures in what was starting to appear to be an underwater metropolis. We were all built using the same bizarre architecture as the first.
Mr. Camberson, can you hear me? Please respond!
Dr. Petra said to the microphone. But either he couldn't hear her or he was ignoring her. The intensity of his gibbering increased every moment. The submersible continued to pass through the emerging cityscape, and meanwhile, Dr. Petra, Matt, and Donnie watched in horror as more of the fish frog-like humans began to appear in and around the buildings. They were each about the size of a full-grown man, their blank, expressionless faces indicating no emotion, their hideous, bulbous eyes staring with unknowable intent. Other life forms came into view amongst that humanoid creature as well. They were amorphous, protoplasmic black blobs, nearly 5 meters in diameter, that spontaneously formed and unformed hideous eyes, pustules of pulsating green light, and tentacle-like appendages. They resembled nightmarish, vile amoebas that seemed even more terrifying with the haunting shadow thrown by the submersible's light system. Just the sight of one was enough to make Matt gag.
Mr. Camberson, please respond!
Dr. Petra shouted in desperation. It was no use.
Oh, this is gonna be one hell of a documentary, Donnie said.
The submersible reached what appeared to be a solid stone wall and began drifting upwards. And after a few moments, it became clear that it wasn't a wall, but it was instead the edge of a huge sarcophagus. The camera panned away and revealed the front of the sarcophagus had a large image carved into it of a hideous creature with the body of a man, the head of an octopus, and the wings of a bat. Matt got a chill when he recognized the image as one of those drawings that Camberson showed him in his office. His heart sank when he saw a motif of stars carved directly above the creature's head that was in the same pattern as that strange constellation that he and Donnie had seen the previous night. Camberson's voice rang through the speakers chanting,
V'noi mine nival Cthulhu relie v'nal nagal fatagin. V'noi mine nival Cthulhu relie v'nal nagal fatagin.
As he did so, the submersible's peripheral cameras showed the frog-like creatures had surrounded it, each carrying stones and crude hand weapons, and they attacked, smashing against its hull. Camberson continued to chant,
Yay, Fanal, Cthulhu, Yay, Fanal, Canal, Fatagan.
Loud metallic clanging sounds rang through the speakers in addition to the sound of Camberson's chanting. Dr. Petra, Matt, and Donnie could do nothing but watch in horror as one by one the submersible's cameras were destroyed, leaving nothing but static in their respective monitors. Eventually, there was one camera left, the one trained directly on the sarcophagus. It showed the sarcophagus's lid opening slightly, letting forth a cloud of bubbles, and the last image they saw was a sickening black tentacle writhing out from inside. And then the monitor showed only static.
A long, low moaning sound came from underneath the ship and shook vigorously for several seconds.
Donnie said,
Guys, I think we should probably leave. Nobody's going anywhere,
said Captain Bill, who stood in front of the hatch to the ship's bridge as he held out his huge Bowie knife threateningly. Blood streamed down his face as it quickly became apparent that he'd cut out his injured eye, which he now held in his other hand. For some reason, he kept the eye patch on over the now empty socket. He said,
I told you the stars were aligned against us, and now it's too late. You'll sacrifice yourselves to Great Cthulhu, for that which is dead may never die.
Captain Bill took a menacing step toward them and began reciting the same chant that they'd heard earlier from Camberson.
V'noi mingain nafar Cthulhu wulye wagal nagal fatagin.
Dr. Petra quickly grabbed the wrench from her workstation. Then, with a mighty yell, she rushed towards Captain Bill. He hadn't been expecting this, and he freely swung his knife so that he barely nicked her arm before she managed to smash the wrench down atop his skull, knocking him out cold. She said to Matt and Donnie, I've got some rope over behind the cabinet. Tie him up before he regains consciousness. What are you gonna do? Asked Matt. I'm gonna get us the hell out of here. You know how to sail a boat? I'm a scientist. I'll figure it out. Once Captain Bill was safely tied up, the three went through the hatch and up to the bridge. Dr. Petra immediately began engaging the rudder's buttons and dials to
deduce how to control the ship, and just as she figured it out, a rumbling came from beneath the ocean and a massive black tentacle erupted from below the surface, towering into the sky. It was easily 15 stories high, and it blocked out the sun so that the great shadow fell across the boat. Dr. Petra urgently spun the ship's wheel, and as she did so, the tentacle began to fall towards them. Donnie and Matt yelled in fear as the tentacle just barely missed them, smashing into the water and sending a massive wave that propelled the boat away while knocking everyone to their feet. Dr. Petra recovered, moving the ship away from the dive site as fast as she could, and after they'd gone a few kilometers, there seemed to be no more attacks forthcoming from the ocean. Matt and Donnie went to the ship's stern, looking back at the ocean as they sped away. And then in the distance, they saw what appeared to be a gigantic octopus breaching the surface of the water, its gargantuan tentacles flailing around, its huge, disgusting eyes focused on them with the purest indifference they'd ever felt. Matt and Donnie felt a presence, one trying to invade their minds. They struggled to resist it for several minutes, and finally they overcame the mental assault. They looked at each other and realized if they were more mentally unstable, they might have become enthralled in the same way as Camberson and Captain Bill. And then the octopus sank back beneath the waves.